Could you tell us your name, please?
William Corby.
Okay, could you tell us when you were born?
January 9th, 1899.
Okay, where were you born?
In Lawrence County, out in the country.
Were you near Newcastle? Whereabouts? What town was it near?
About 8 miles out of Newcastle.
Okay. Were your parents American? What nationality were your parents?
Finnish.
Finnish? Mm-hmm. Both parents Finnish?
Yeah.
Were they born in this country?
No.
They were both
They came here when they were young.
I see. And what did you do for a living? Did you have one occupation most of your life?
No. I started out working on a farm 18 hours a day for $10 a month. Uh-huh. 7 days a week, Sundays and all. Never had no time off. I was 14 years old then. Another farmer come along one day and said, hey, he says, what's that old skinflint playing you? I says, $10 a month. He says, turn in your notice, come and work for me, and I'll give you $12 a month. And if I catch you working after 6 o'clock, he says, I'll give you a swift kick.
Uh-huh.
I went to work for him. It was like a vacation after working 18 hours a day.
Why was the one guy working you so hard and the other guy so much easier?
Because he was just a money grabber.
Oh, I see.
And he left all the, we run a dairy. Uh-huh. I delivered milk. We got up 5 o'clock in the morning, uh-huh. milked 16 cows, then went in, had a little breakfast and hurried up, bought all that milk, and then it hit the team up and delivered milk in Lowellville, Ohio.
Uh-huh.
Then come home just in time to have a little dinner, then go out and clean the stables. And in the wintertime, pump water in out of a deep well through a kinky old hose. Took 3.5 barrels and 360 strokes to fill the barrel. I'll never forget that. I counted that so many times, I'll never forget it.
Uh-huh.
Back-breaking job.
Yeah.
I finished up 11 o'clock at night washing the bottles.
Is that right?
From 5 in the morning to 11 at night for $10 a month.
Yeah. You must have been pretty discouraged living that way, weren't you?
Well, my father and two sisters were killed when I was 2 years old.
Oh.
And I don't even remember my father. And my mother had always had such a rough time making ends meet.
I see.
Two of my older brothers, they were keeping the family together. And I figured, well, I've had 6 grades of school. I'm smart enough to take on the world now.
Yeah.
And I went to work for $10 a month. I would give her 9 and keep 1 myself.
Mm-hmm.
She said, don't you need any more? Oh, I said, I've got so much money, I can't spend all of it.
Families felt very close in those days with supporting each other, didn't they?
Yeah, and nobody cared how hard a kid worked. They said, but the kids are put in this world to work. Let them work. What do we care what they're doing?
Mm-hmm.
Push them for all they were worth.
There was no sympathy with kids.
Oh, no, and today it's so wonderfully different.
Yeah.
Parents won't allow their kids work at something like that, nohow.
Yeah.
They'd say, no, you're not going to work at all if you can't find something better than that.
How'd your father die, do you know? How did your father die?
And my father and two young sisters were hit by a passenger train, killed instantly.
Oh, do you know how it happened?
They were crossing a crossing where they'd cut the freight cars just enough to let you through.
Yeah.
And them days, the lights on passenger trains with just an old oil light in front, and you had to be putting her up to them to see it.
Uh-huh.
And the train was coasting downhill at high speed.
Uh-huh.
Well, they didn't blow the whistle or anything. They just as soon as they got on the track, you couldn't see until they were on the track, and it was too late. The train was on them.
Oh. Uh-huh.
A tragic thing was that afternoon that they were born, my next sister, younger than me, was born that night. I could never imagine how my mother came through that. I think of that so many times.
That's a tragedy.
And then about 2 years after that, she married again.
Mm-hmm.
And my stepfather died in 1912 with a heart attack, died suddenly. We lived up in Burton, Ohio, on a farm.
I see. Well, how did a widow get along?
She kept boarders. There was a limestone quarry not far from that. Them days, everyone kept boarders to supplement their income.
I see.
Well, she kept boarders, and they paid so little, I think about $50 a month for food and board.
Uh-huh.
Them days, and there was very little profit left from that, but she managed to feed the family on it.
Uh-huh. There was no government help at all, I don't suppose.
Oh, no, not a thing.
Uh-huh.
And the stinkers from the railroad, they sent their lawyer down.
Yeah.
Just after my sister was born, my mother, she was in such a state of mind at that time, everything piling up at once. Mm-hmm. And he told her to sign some papers. Now he says, I'll take care of you if she signed the release. And what burns me up, nobody in the neighborhood would go to bat for it. Mm-hmm. If they had taken that court, they could have beat them.
Yeah.
Well, they sent a tombstone down on the railroad on a flat car, and they had it unloaded down by the not too far from my place at that crossing where they were killed. And they notified her that they sent a nice tombstone down for her that she can put on the grave. Mm. She went over and looked at it. She said, that can just lay there. If that's all they can offer for what they did.
Yeah.
If them cars had been cut farther apart, they could have stopped, but there was just room to drive across that narrow crossing.
What do you mean, cut?
Well, it cut the train, big long train.
And it was lying
and they
across
separated
the road,
them just enough to
the
you
traffic
could get
to go through.
Uh-huh. Well, then when they picked that train up, they pushed them together and take off.
I see. Yeah.
There was a lot of empty cars parked at this crossing. There were 6 to 7 tracks
Where
there.
Where was that, near Newcastle?
Below Lowellville, about 4 miles. It was on about 3 miles on the Pennsylvania side.
Mm-hmm. I suppose she even had a hard time after your stepfather died, huh?
Oh, yeah. We lived on a farm in Pennsylvania where carbon limestone quarry has all quarried out. That whole farm is gone, a big farm. Mm-hmm. And we decided for some reason, I was about 6, 7 years old then, mm-hmm. to move to Burton, Ohio. Well, they had friends up there, and they told them, oh, it's much nicer farming country, and they'd love it up there. Mm-hmm. So we sold everything off on the farm and instead of trying to move the cattle and machinery and everything.
Yeah.
Went up there and went head over heels in debt buying cattle to start this dairy farm. Machinery and everything.
Your mother was doing this?
No, my stepfather.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And we just got going pretty good, and he got that heart attack one day, and he just died suddenly.
Yeah. What'd you do then? What'd you do with the farm?
Well, we stayed there for about 3 or 4 years, and got most of the debt paid off.
Mm-hmm.
And my brothers, they didn't want to struggle up there anymore. They wanted to come back.
Why?
Down in the area where they could get better paid jobs. Up there, you couldn't get a job over $10 or $15 a month.
Oh, this paid better in Western Pennsylvania, huh?
Yeah. Well, we came back to Ohio, long close to the border.
Oh, I see.
The Pennsylvania line. You get job in limestone quarry, steel mills, and get 4 times that much.
So then your older brothers were able to help your mother, and you were able to help your mother by then.
Uh-huh. Well,
how many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had 3 brothers and 3 sisters, besides the 2 that were killed.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Now I have 1 sister, 2 sisters left. One of them, she's 92 in December.
Uh-huh.
She lives right near Lowellville, just up over the hill a little ways. And the other sister lives in Virginia.
Uh-huh. Long lived, huh? Yeah. What did you do for the most part of your life?
Well, after I worked for this farmer, well, then I had a chance to get a job in the limestone quarry throwing switch for $1 a day. Oh, boy, I couldn't turn that down. Oh, a whole buck every day. You know what throwing the switch is. Them days they stripped the limestone with steam shovels, loaded into cars, and the dinky engines pulled the car out to a dump, and the gang out there would dump them.
Mm-hmm.
And then send them back down to be filled again. Mm-hmm. Well, they had 2 trains going all the time.
Oh.
So one was up there being dumped, the other was being loaded.
Uh-huh.
So I got a job throwing switch, and I wasn't there very
long. Well, what did you throw a switch on?
Well, they pulled into the back.
Oh, the track. You switched the track.
And then I'd throw the switch, and I'd take them out to the dump.
I see.
You had to watch, turn the switch the right way, or boy, that handle would knock you end over end.
Right?
You did have a turn right to hit that.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Well, I wasn't there. I worked there 3 or 4 months. I was still just a kid, but 16. And the contractor, he was from I forget down in Pennsylvania someplace, but he stayed in Newcastle, and then he'd go home over the weekend.
Yeah.
But he was just always up there running the job. But one day come along, and I hadn't been up there very long. He says, hey, he says, can you run a dinky engine? Oh, sure I can. He says, okay. It's one of the dinky skinners. They call them engineer dinky skinners. Didn't show up. He says, get on there. He said, keep it moving. Well, you had to do your own firing, throw your own coal on, keep the boiler filled.
All by yourself.
All by yourself. And man, was that a big deal.
Yeah.
I got along all right.
Kind of exciting, huh?
Yeah. Well, I worked there for about 2 years.
What were those dinky engines like to drive? How much coal did you have to put in them?
Well, they had a cab there, I suppose about that
six,
wide.
6 feet wide?
And here was your boiler. You sat over here. And this side here, you shovel that pull of coal. It'd hold maybe 300 or 400 pounds of coal. You had to coal up every once in a while. There, the tank was a saddle tank right over the boiler. Uh-huh. Well, you had to pull down there and fill that up every once in a while. Uh-huh. Boy, it kept you busy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But it was fun. You know, forget to run that pull that throttle to watch that old baby go. Yeah. You know?
Driving along. Yeah. Was it dangerous at all?
Well,
how about all those heavy stones? Could you ever tip them over or something like that?
Well, once in a while they'd jump the track and you'd pile them up, but it wouldn't take very long. Throw some pieces of railings and block the wood and give them a pull and get one on and pretty soon the other and first you know you were gone again.
Yeah.
The dinkies weighed around 7-8 tons. They weren't very big. But they would go like the dickens. Most dangerous part was, here was the limestone along here.
Yeah.
And you pull down here, and then you crossed over. Well, they built a trestle across there.
Across the opening. The
gap. Because the limestone tracks, where they carried the limestone away, were right down below you. Uh-huh. They had to build a trestle across there, and then you had to come over here, and you make a sharp turn. And boy, if that first car would have jumped off, the whole works would have likely piled up.
But how high was that?
About 30 feet.
Oh, that was kind of scary then, huh?
Yeah, that was. You had to take a run on it because it's always up a little grade. You couldn't go down there slow.
Yeah.
And you had to take a pretty good run on it in order to get up on the dump. And that worried me for a little bit, but after I made a few trips, I guess I'm okay, and I'll let her go. But we never had any bad accidents.
Uh-huh. Was it a dangerous job working in those quarries?
Yes, it is.
Did many men get hurt?
At that time, there was quite a few, but then they put so many safety measures in, now it's much safer. They would put out big shots of limestone, and if you didn't hear the guy hollering fire, sometime, boy, there'd be a shower of limestone up, and you looked, and sometime you had to run to duck or be able to rock that big coming right at you.
I see, they just shouted, huh? They didn't blow any whistles or
no,
ring any bells?
No,
they would
hollering fire a couple of times and light the fuse and they'd run.
Kind of careless, huh?
Yeah, but I don't know. After you worked on dynamite and stuff like that, you didn't think anything about it. My brother and I used to take a quarter of a stick of dynamite, cut in four pieces, and put a cap and a fuse in about that long.
Yeah.
We'd see who could explode it highest up in the air. That put chills up my back every time I think of it. Oh, boy.
Yeah. What would have happened if it had gone?
Oh, boy. That would have been the end.
Yeah.
There would have been no playing around.
Yeah.
But after you worked with that for a while, you don't think. You don't feel it's too dangerous.
Yeah, I understand. Anyone ever get killed in the quarries?
Once in a while, not too often.
What killed them?
Well, once in a while, they would get hit with a rock from a...
An explosion.
Uh-huh. And...
They didn't wear hard hats, did they?
No. Oh, no.
Did you wear any protective clothing at all?
No. Not the only pair.
When did hard hats come in, you know?
Not until they start building construction. There used to be so many rivets of a building, so they're building, putting up steel work, rivets to drop and hit someone on the head.
Oh,
and
I see.
Well, we'll put a hard hat on them, and then they at least won't get a fractured skull.
I see.
A lot of these big plants now, they won't lie in there without a hard hat.
How many hours a day did you work at the limestone pit?
10 hours.
10 hours.
10 hours, 6 days a week.
All day Saturday?
All day.
All day.
Ten hours.
Did you ever get any holidays? What days?
No, they didn't know what a holiday was some days. You work holidays and all.
Even Christmas? You got Christmas off, didn't you?
We did get Christmas off. That is really the only holiday.
Not even Thanksgiving?
No.
Is that right? Well, did you celebrate Thanksgiving in those days?
Oh, yes. We'd have big dinner when we got home.
Oh, I see. How long did you work in the quarry mill?
I worked there 2 years and then a building contractor from Youngstown. I'd worked for his father-in-law on this farm. He seen how crazy I went to work 18 hours a day. Well, he kept me 2 or 3 trips down from Youngstown wanting me to learn the carpenter trade. So finally convinced me. It was only 25 cents an hour to start with then. And union scale was 62.5 for a first-class carpenter. I thought, well, by God, maybe I should learn a trade. So I went to work for him. I worked for him 9 months. And we got all the finishing done that winter, and the weather was too rough to want to start roughing in anymore, so he laid everybody off. He said, we'll have to take a rest now until the weather clears, as long as I let all of you know. Well, I loafed about 1 week, and Stone and Webb's a big contractor from Philadelphia was building a $1 million addition on our powerhouse, just a little ways from Lowellville. And I heard that.
Lowellville?
Lowellville, yeah.
How do you spell that?
Lowellville.
And where is that located? Near?
It's about half a mile from the Pennsylvania line, right along the Mahoning River.
I see.
And by the way, I fished on that Mahoning River when I was 5 years old.
Is that right? That cesspool now?
You could see through six feet of water and count the pebbles in the bottom. It was like spring water.
Is that right? Even when the steel mills were there?
Well, the steel mills were just starting then.
I see.
But they hadn't started polluting yet.
I see.
We used to catch all kinds of fish in that river. I used to catch them with a bent pin with a piece of heavy thread on. We had a boat tied to dock. I was just about 5 years old, and I'd find some worms that I'd get out the end of the boat and drop that line down. Pretty soon I'd have a sunfish or a shiner about that big. And oh boy, that was a big deal. I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
We lived in an old stone house right close to the river. Well,
So after you're laid off, what'd you do?
Well, I loafed for about a week, and then I heard there was a big gang of carpenters building concrete forms on this addition job. And I thought, well, just for fun, I'm going down. I went down, and I found the foreman, and he was a fellow, about 35 years old, one of the finest fellows I'd ever met in my life. And I talked to him a little bit, and I asked him if he's hiring any. He's always, I have all the helpers I need. I said, I'm not a helper, I'm a carpenter. He looked, he said, you're a carpenter? I said, yeah.
He said,
you have to belong to union to work here. He said, if this weren't a union job, I wouldn't be here. Here I joined the union because I thought it'd be a big deal to him. I showed him the card. Well, it didn't have any much information, only that I was a member. He's doggone, he said, you must be a carpenter. I said, yeah. He said, well, how long have you worked at trade? Oh, I don't know, it's been so long, I just don't remember. All right, that's enough. He says, wait a minute. And he signed a slip. He says, give it to that fellow in that office in the morning and come to work.
Oh, pretty good.
And
huh?
Made out fine, 62.5 cents an hour right
is
off the bat.
Is that right?
No problems at all.
I'm kind of surprised to hear that there were union shops around. The Carpenters Union was pretty well organized then. Huh?
Yeah, it was. Well, the carpenter, their business agent, come on the job one day. He says, hey, kid, he says, you won't have to join the union for 2 or 3 years, but he says, wouldn't it be kind of nice to have a card? I said, yeah, I would. He says, well, he said, I'll let you in for $5. I said, okay, I gave him the $5, and he gave me the card. And I go, boy, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
Well, it worked on that, that job. I stayed there till the job was finished, and they wanted me to go to Philadelphia with them. They were going to build a $5 million shipyard. $5 million them days. Boy, that was a fortune.
And he before says, you go on with that, let me just ask you something about unions. The men I've been interviewing from the Grove City area said there were no unions, there were no unions in the coal mines. It's surprising to hear that the foreman wouldn't even hire you unless you were a union man.
Yeah, well, see, all the rest of the fellows were union men, and they wouldn't leave a non-union man come on the job.
Oh, I see. That's how they handle
it. Yeah, that's how they handle it.
Well, didn't the owners, the bosses, get mad at that back then, that early? What year was that?
Well, they complained about it didn't do any good for the guys that walk off the job if they bought a non-union man on the job. And that's how they worked it. Of course, they didn't gain too much by it because the contractor usually had their own way. You know, 62 and a half cents an hour ain't very big pay. Now they want a dollar an hour raise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was 62 cents an hour.
Yeah. And it was very good money, wasn't it?
Oh, that time, that was a fortune.
Yeah.
Boy, that first paycheck I got, oh boy, I'm going to look for a Cadillac.
Yeah. What year was that?
1917. Mm-hmm. Well, I worked there then until that job finished up,
mm-hmm.
and I heard of 50 houses being built on Republic Avenue in Youngstown,
mm-hmm.
right across the Republic River Work that used to be up there, and I thought, by golly, maybe they haven't hired too many. I went up, and here I happen to know the foreman on the job,
mm-hmm.
and he said, what are you doing? I said, looking for a job. Good, come to work tomorrow morning.
Oh.
He says, mm-hmm. we need a lot of men here. He said, we've got a big job ahead of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They built concrete forms out of panels, put them up, and then poured them full of concrete, tore the forms out, and moved them to another.
For houses?
Yeah. All concrete
were these workers' houses?
Hmm?
Workers' houses for steel workers?
Resident houses for anyone, real nice homes.
Well, what were they like? What was it like? Since you built these houses, you must have known them pretty well. What were the houses like? Were they made the same way they are today?
Yeah, about the same. Yeah, wood frame or wood frame, and of course they didn't put as much insulation on it they do now.
Uh-huh.
They put 1x8 siding on,
like
a solid board, nail them on, and then put the lap siding over top of that
to keep the wind out.
Yeah,
were they pretty airtight? Or were
well, pillars? Not too airtight. They should have had some paper between the two, but
they didn't put paper.
Well, then a few years after that, then some guy come up with the idea of putting paper on.
When did they begin putting paper on? Do you know what year?
Not till around 1920,
uh-huh.
and then some contractor started that. Well, then the rest of them had to follow suit because he got all the business that they didn't.
Did you live in Youngstown while you were doing that job?
No, at Lowville. I used to go to work on a streetcar. We had a streetcar service then.
From Lowville to Youngstown?
To Youngstown, yeah. That is about a 15, 20-minute ride.
Oh,
it
that's
wasn't
all.
Far.
Oh, it was a kind of a suburb of Youngstown then, huh?
Well, it's Lowville, and then about 2.5 when they hit Struthers, and then from Struthers on through Camel and into Youngstown, just really all one.
Yeah.
It was about solid.
Mm-hmm. What kind of a town was Youngstown in those days?
Youngstown was a real good town at that time. There was very little crime or corruption. It's not like it is now. You didn't know anything about racketeers them days.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is that right?
But the worst thing that happened, some guy would get drunk and get fight on the street, and that's about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, then you were a carpenter most of your life, huh?
No, I worked at that for 2 years, and every winter, same old thing. They
out of work.
Couldn't work outside, and you moved around from one shop to another. That ain't going to be no good. So I went in the blast. We had a blast furnace. Sharon Steele had a blast furnace in Lowville. I thought, I'm going over there and see what that's like. I went over there and talked to the shop foreman, the maintenance foreman. And told him I was looking for a job. He says, all right, we have an opening here in the repair gang.
Did you tell him you were a carpenter?
I told him. He wondered what I worked at. I told him I worked at carpenter trade. He said, well, that's all right.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you're willing to work. He says, come out.
What did he pay?
That paid 40 cents an hour.
But it was all year round.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was 10 hours a day, 7 days a week, Sundays
seven
and all.
7 days a week?
And I only worked there about they only kept one machinist in the shop. I was only there 4 months. He and the machinist always fought. He'd tell the machinist how he wanted a job done. The machinist, he thought he was smarter than the boss, and he'd make change. A lot of time he'd scrap something very valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had some terrific fights. Mm-hmm. One day the machine said, "Well, I'm quitting." The boss said, "Well, that's the first good thing you've ever promised me." Mm-hmm. He left. Mm-hmm. And he left on Saturday. And the boss said to me, he says, "Can you run a lathe?" "Oh, yeah." Mm-hmm. So he says, "All right." He says, "Sunday morning, I'll give you a couple jobs to turn up. You see how you make out." It's okay. Mm-hmm. I'd never run one, but boy, did I keep my eye on him any time I was in that shop. Watch every move he made.
Yeah.
And so a couple hours later, he says, "Where did you run a lathe before?" I said, "I never did." "Hey, wait a minute. Now you told me you could run a lathe." I said, "I told you I can run a lathe, and I know I can."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "All right." He says, "Wise guy." He says, "I'll still give you a chance." Sunday morning, he had two shafts there about that long, rough forgings. They forged out in the blacksmith shop to make axles for two foundry crane wheels. He told me how close I had to be fit. We didn't have any micrometers them days, just caliper. And I'd never caliper a thing in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned that first one up, you look like a piece of jewelry. Come in. I just taken it out of the lace. He says, "What are you doing, making jewelry for a high-class watch or something?" Mm-hmm. He said, "Well, you put a shine on that." "Well, you wouldn't want it rough for an axle, would you? Them bearings had to be smooth."
Yeah.
"Well," he said, "not quite that shiny."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Well, they'll last longer." So just then his assistant came in. "Come here, watch it. We'll see what kind of a machinist this guy is. They always drove that axle all the way into that steel wheel. It's like a railroad wheel."
Yeah.
And they drove it in and then drove it back out to make sure that it was going to fit when they dropped it in between the channels.
Uh-huh.
They dropped it in between two channels, and then drove the axle through, and then bolted the bearings on the outside. And it had to be a perfect fit.
Mm-hmm.
If it was too tight, they had a dickens of a time driving it out of there.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
So, they were doing me all kinds of kidding. The boss said, "Well," he said, "this thing's either going to drop through that wheel, or a 50-ton press won't press it in." "Oh, no," I said, "it'll fit." I wasn't sure. By golly, they start driving that thing, and 12 strokes. Put that right down in place.
With just calipers?
Yeah. And the boss says, "Listen," he came over and slapped me on the shoulder. He says, "I couldn't make a fit like that myself." And he said, "I figure myself an expert." And I said, "Go ahead and spoil the other one." I said, "Oh, no, I'm going to spoil it. We need that." I made the other one, and by golly, it fit the same. I could never believe it. It was just plain luck.
Mm-hmm.
I just figured I had an invisible guiding hand because I wasn't that clever, but boy, that came out so good. He says, "All right," he says, "I'm going to leave you on there for a couple of weeks, see how you make out." He says, "This might be a fluke."
Mm-hmm.
Well, I said, "That might be."
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I think they came here, I turned it up, but I done a pretty complicated job.
Yeah.
One job I done, you'd never believe, they'd have said I was crazy. The assistant foreman had a 1910 Ford, and the cylinders and pistons were worn so bad, it pumped oil so bad you couldn't keep spark plugs on it. And he talked to me one day, he said, "I don't know what to do with old Lizzie." He says, "Whether to get rid of it or get another engine." I said, "No," I says, "tear the block out, bring it in here, I'll bore it on the lathe." "Oh," he says, "you couldn't bore them cylinders true on the lathe." I said, "Dickens, I can't." I told him I'd done it. This old lathe had a regular spindle, just like you find on all of them.
Right.
And then it had another one, casting run up with another spindle on top. And we had a faceplate that big in diameter. Just
about 4 feet?
Plain. It's about 5 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be put on that top spindle, and we could bolt big castings on that, indeed on the blast furnace, to turn them. You had to put an extension on the cross feed to put your tool rest up on top. I said, "I put that on the top face plate and do your perfect job."
Mm-hmm.
"Well, by golly," he says, "I'll bring it in." I said, "Bring it in so it'll be here on a Saturday afternoon when the big shots are all gone." I said, "I'll bore that up by evening."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "I don't think you'll do it that quick." I said, "Oh, yeah."
Mm-hmm.
So I got a piece of steel about that long. I turned up a mandrel with centers on it.
And what's a mandrel?
Well, I'll tell you what this is for. When he brought that block in, I had that mandrel hidden in my locker. I went and got it. I wanted to see how it fit the cylinder. Oh, boy, that thing just pushed in.
Uh-huh.
And that another caliper fit. I knew the Ford cylinder was 3 3/4 in diameter.
Uh-huh.
Well, I calipered as close as I could to 3 3/4. There's always about that much of the bottom of an automobile cylinder doesn't wear because the rings don't hit that.
Yeah, it didn't go down there.
And boy, that thing just went in slick. Uh-huh. I hooked the hoist on, raised it up, put it on centers, and I pushed the block up against that faceplate, clamped it down, pulled the mandrel out. I was ready to bore. Mm-hmm. No shifting or fooling. Mm-hmm. 4 hours I was through with that, and the cylinders looked like mirrors. I got piston off the Ford dealer, 31,000 silver size, to make sure that I'd get the cylinders all the same size. I used that piston for fitting them. Mm-hmm. You ought to heard that engine run. When he brought back that thing, was
renewed, huh?
Not even a puff of smoke out of the tailpipe. Oh, was he tickled with it. I liked that job more than any job I had in my life. The boss never bothered me.
Is that right?
If you'd done a good job, he'd pat you on the back. Hey, boy, that's okay. That's swell.
How long did you work there?
Then they shut the place down after there a little over 2 years. It just seemed every job I went on folded up in 2 years at first. Well, I looked around a while, and Ford dealer in Lowellville, he didn't want nothing to do with the shop, for he didn't know about anything about the mechanical end of a car. And he always rented the shop to a mechanic, and then they done his work and their own and serviced the new cars and everything.
Oh.
Well, I had a 19...
Oh, he was an auto agency, an auto dealer?
Yeah, auto dealer. We're all small. And we had to rebush them every once in a while.
In 29?
Yeah. And I don't know why they hired me, because they had fellows walking over one another, but the company was making so much money, they hired anyone to come along. To
even after the crash?
No, that is before.
Oh, just before the crash.
That is before.
Weren't you afraid that the mill would close when the crash
came?
Well,
I figured if they closed, it wouldn't be any worse than the garage
business. I see.
Keeping going with no money coming in.
Yeah. Did you sell your garage?
Yeah, well, I got talked the dealer into taking it back. I said, you've got Ed here. I said, you won't have to worry a thing about the shop. I said, all you have to do is pay Ed. Mm-hmm. And I said, he'll take care of the shop. Well, he says, okay, he says. Mm-hmm. And he
did
bought
the dealer,
what tools I had.
The dealer knew that the crash was coming, or figured it did.
Yes.
Was he getting ready for it, you know? Did he last long after the crash?
Yeah, he stayed there all through the Depression, but he didn't make any money.
Uh-huh. And, but at least he stayed in business.
And the shop, uh-huh. It was just put near shut down. Mm-hmm. There was very few people that had any money.
Yeah.
They come in, want work done, but you had to charge them. Well, you can only do that so long.
Yeah.
So all your money's gone.
Oh, I see. They gave credit in the early part of the Depression.
Oh, yes. I gave credit to everybody. I gave credit to people. I didn't know where they lived or what their name was.
Mm-hmm.
And when I quit, there was so little on the book that I threw the book away. It wasn't worth even going on after it. People were honest them days.
Mm-hmm. So you just gave credit, assuming they'd pay, huh?
Yeah, and a lot of guys said, hey, where'd that guy live? I said, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Well, but if he doesn't come back? Well, if he doesn't, he'll be the first one that didn't.
Uh-huh.
But by God, if there's any size of a bill, they came back and paid it.
Uh-huh.
And I run this gas station now with the pantry store for 15 years. After I finally quit the mill after 21 years, I come back here in 64, and I start running it just like I did the garage and high. Holy smoke. Boy, they just take the
people
shirt off
changed,
your back.
Huh? People have changed.
Oh, yeah, over here, because no one would collect for you. In Ohio, we had the garnishee law. If a guy didn't pay you, go to his employer and turn the bill in, and he paid you. Well, they didn't put up with that in the mill. If you got three garnishees on your wages, you were fired. That is even in the union contract. Well, guys didn't want to lose their job, boy. They paid their bills.
I wonder why they stopped doing that.
Well, they still have that in Ohio.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
Oh.
And that law is used so very little, a lot of people don't forget that it really exists anymore.
Yeah. Did people stay honest throughout the Depression?
Oh, yes.
You didn't find them getting greedy or anything because they were so short of money?
No. No, that's right. Well, everyone felt sorry for everyone else. They knew what the businessmen were up against, and Uh-huh. Everybody was fairly honest.
Uh-huh. What'd you do? How'd you get through the depression? You stayed in the mill?
I stayed in the mill, but they shut it down. I saved a guy's life that electrocuted up there.
Oh, did
and
you?
I think that's one reason they laid off on everybody in the construction gang. Then there was three foremen and myself left, and I'm looking for pink slip any day. But I think they kept me there because I saved a guy's life that electrocuted.
Well, tell me how that happened.
An inventor from Cleveland had electric tube welder that he was trying to perfect. Well, they moved it into one of the powerhouses that had a lot of room in, and he had to have a machinist work with him on this machine. Well, the fellow that was with him got sick, and he was gone for about 3 or 4 weeks, and the boss sent me over. He said, you go over and work with that inventor on that electric welder till Joe gets back. Joe gets back, but this inventor talked to boss into keeping me there because I helped him a lot on it. I saw some things that he didn't see on it. And then when the depression got so bad, then they finally shut that off. They didn't want to spend any more money for experimenting.
Yeah.
And so they sent me back to the machine shop. I said, well, this is it. And I said, oh, you go in the machine shop. Well, we got paid every 2 weeks. One pay, you had one day coming. And the next pay, you had 2 days coming. That are 3 days a month.
Is that right?
And I still don't know how we got by. I had a wonderful wife, though. She was a wonderful manager. And she could stretch a half a dollar out. I made it look like a fortune. We got by.
Well, how'd you save that guy's life?
Oh, I was working there one day, and a fellow named Ed Fisher and his buddy, they were steam engineers, and they come in and talked a little bit. Then, well, we got to back here and test the flow meter on the steam line that goes up to the seamless tube mill to make sure it's working right. Lighting painted, they went back there, and I see him get a ladder. Put it up there, and one fellow climbed up there to make some connections on to put it on some kind of a gadget they had there. And the first thing, the flash of fire, and I looked back there, there's a little room in the back of the powerhouse where they had big transformers in there. And seen a flash of fire, and I run back to see what happened, and his buddy was crying. He said, Ed killed! He said, his foot slipped off that guard and hooked into that bus bar, 3,400 volts. Big brass bar come out of there, and there's guardrail all around, but he was standing on top, 1 foot on top of the guardrail, one on the ladder, working up. The foot on the guardrail slipped off and just hooked into there. Uh-huh. And boy, he come tumbling down like a coil of rope.
Yeah.
Well, I had a little life-saving experience. I was a Boy Scout for several years. And I told her another fellow, I said, call the ambulance and tell them to send the doctor along. The company had their own hospital there. And said, let's get him in the other room real quick. Put him in the other room, and I laid my cap under his face on the cement floor so his face wouldn't be on the floor, and I started using artificial respiration on him. I told the other guy, hold his pulse. Well, I first opened his eyes, and all the color was gone out of his eyes, and he wasn't breathing. No pulse. I said, you hold his pulse. I'll see if we can get any pulse at all. I don't know how long I worked on, but I just kept that rhythm up. Finally, he was holding his pulse, and a tear ran down his cheek. Ed was a good friend of his. Pretty soon, he says, oh, I felt a faint beat. I said, don't move your fingers. Keep them where they are. And I was afraid maybe he'd lose his touch there. And well, he said, now I feel a faint one, but he says, real weak. And at one, hey, it's picking up. And just Ed opened his mouth a little wider. He's laying open his mouth a little wider, and it, boy, his chest come up. You can't imagine. Your lungs are collapsed. You're only about that thick. Oh. Man, it come up like that. And, oh, boy, he's going to breathe. Open his mouth. He didn't start to breathe. I thought, what the dickens? So I come down real hard. Something flew out of his mouth across the floor, went spinning, and I thought he had a red lead pencil down his throat.
Yeah.
Well, I couldn't see what it was.
Seven meals enough?
Huh?
Seven meals?
Yeah.
Seven? Okay, I'll get them.
Okay. And when I come down here, that is a long clot of blood. Looked like a night crawler. That is in the windpipe. Well, we had him sitting up on the floor, and every time he'd take a breath, he'd just spit out a big mouthful of blood. He had a puddle on the floor like that, just looked like a pancake, congealed blood. Mm-hmm. And the doctor said he had a hemorrhage of one lung, mm-hmm. and that current went up through his body. Mm-hmm. But again, the doctor got there. It was only bleeding very little. Mm-hmm. And so we gave him a chest breath a little bit, and he says, all right. He said, I think he'd be all right. And I said, well, I'm going to ride over to the hospital when the hospital gets across the bridge.
Yeah.
I stayed in the ambulance with them to watch him. We got over there and put him in bed, and I got the... It took him quite a while before he came to. He'd look around and talk to him, and he didn't seem to even hear what you said. But finally he started reviving, and mm-hmm. he was in the hospital for a couple of months, and mm-hmm. he came out, and he was all right, came back to work.
Completely okay, huh?
Yeah, they gave me a big medal. I shut the whole plant one day, had a big safety meeting, and a speaker stand, and the big shots were all talking. Mm-hmm. The mayor from Youngstown, a lot of councilmen and several attorneys. Boy, they had all the celebrities there mm-hmm. that made a big deal of, and they gave me this medal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for safety.
Yeah.
What year was that?
1931.
Did many guys get killed in the mills?
Not very many, very few. Mm-hmm. They had a good safety program there.
Oh, they were emphasizing.
If you had a little accident of some kind, some guy pestered the dickens out of you. The guy said, I'll never get hurt again. Some guys never lay off. He said, one of them goes away, next day another one comes in, he'll ask just more questions. They do that just to discourage you. You never want to hear them guys again. Boy, they made it rough for you.
Good idea, huh? Well, when did you quit the mill?
In 1964.
Were you retired? Did you retire?
You were
65 then, weren't you?
No, I was 51 then.
In 64? I thought you were born in 1899.
Yeah.
Well,
I came back here in 50.
Oh, I see. You quit the mill in 50.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And then I come over and took this gas station over. I run that till I retired.
Why did you do that? Why did you...
We got a problem. I got two boxes, two hot meals for Mrs.